Good morning. I'll call the meeting of the Senate Education Committee to order. It is Monday, February 21st, approximately 8:05 a.m. In attendance today are co-chair Meyer, Senator Stevens, and myself, co-chair Thomas. Short crew today. Good morning. Thank you all for being here. First off, this morning, the committee will consider SB 9, Senator Davis's bill regarding or relating to compulsory school attendance. The bill proposes lower the age of mandatory school attendance to 6 and raise it to the age of 18. Public testimony was closed during the last meeting. We do have a few folks today that we have invited to testify, so we'll take that up in a second. Let's see. And later, if time allows, we will take up Senate Bill 83 relating to teacher incentives for board certification, which we heard last week as well. Senator Davis is not here this morning, has other duties. We do want to recognize Senator Giesel is here again today. Thank you for being here. And let's see, Tom, do you have anything that you care to add before we take finish up on public testimony or invited public testimony? Please come forward, put yourself on the record if you have any other comments that occurred to you that you need to
make. Through the chair, Senator French in the last meeting had asked a question if it was conclusive that whether or not increasing the school age would necessarily increase the graduation rates. And in the 6 states, in some of the material I think I had forwarded to you and the aides, 2 out of the 6 did increase the graduation rates. But it's in the states, and in one of those states it was fairly dramatic, but they had done other things as well. And so it isn't necessarily conclusive, but the statistics indicating that those who stay in school longer and graduate is really tremendous at this point as far as personal growth and income and all the other issues that arise. And in one of the handouts that I had encapsulated, it was indicated, I think, in the one that says Building a Grad Nation from November of 2010. It said that since 2002, 12 states have raised the compulsory school age from 16 to 17 or 18, and currently 21 states have a compulsory school age 18, and 32 states have a compulsory school age of 17 or 18. And in some states that have a compulsory school age of 17, like Tennessee and West Virginia, students must remain in school until they are 18 to keep their driver's license. So every state's a little different the way they handle this, but there has been a tremendous trend toward increasing the compulsory school age. And most of this has all happened because none of these laws had changed since long before schooling was so important in our society. That's about it.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions of Tom? Hearing none, thank you. I believe we do have online Superintendent, Anchorage Superintendent Carol Como. Is she online? She's not online. And we also have online, or hopefully we have online, Les Morris, but he's only there for any questions that we may have of him. We do have, at least in the room, Patricia George. If you'd like to come forward, put yourself on the record and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. Through the chair, I'm Patricia George, and I represent the Alaska State Literacy Association, the largest professional education association in Alaska. We have councils in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Kenai, Kodiak, Nome, Valdez, Mattsu Valley, Ketchikan, and Juneau, and over 400 members. We support Senate Bill 9 and want to point the spotlight on the importance of lowering the mandatory school attendance age to 6. I heard it stated that parents have their children in school by age 6, and that's true for most children. But this does not mean that they have them in school regularly and on time. As a former first grade teacher, I was very frustrated by the fact that because parents didn't have to have their child in school until age 7, the school could do nothing about the student who missed school, say, every Wednesday or every Friday, and came to school maybe 10 o'clock when the class started at 8. When discussing the bill with my board of directors last week, one member who is a first grade teacher said one of her students had already missed 35 days of school out of the 100 days that had preceded this meeting. No Child Left Behind mandated that all children read at grade level by third grade. Third grade students are 8 years old. How can we expect our children to be reading at grade level by third grade if they aren't required to be in school until age 7? Senate Bill 9 will give the schools the legal means to enforce regular and punctual school attendance for our beginning learners. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Certainly. Senator Stevens.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Patricia, thank you for being here and all the work your folks have done. I think I understand the need for reducing it from 7 to 6. That makes enormous sense to me, to get a child in school. From your perspective, do you have any comments on the other end, on keeping a child until 18, to change that from 16 to 18? Do you have any reflections on that? Or
we really have not taken a position on that.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Seeing nothing else? Yeah, please. We also have John Alcantara. Please come forward. John, put yourself on the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Alcantara, Government Relations Director for 13,000 public school employees and retirees of the National Education Association of Alaska. Happy President's Day, Senators, and thank you for allowing me to quickly testify. I know sometimes it gets tough juggling House and Senate education committees at the same time. We are on the record as supporting Senate Bill 9 and certainly applaud Senator Davis's attempts to both address the compulsory school attendance and to help address the needs of truancy in Alaska schools. I guess as a little personal note, as a parent of 4 kids and a uncle of 61 nieces and nephews, the vast majority of which are in the state of Alaska, I know how important it is to have some hammer to be able to keep kids in school. The previous testifier mentioned about a person missing 35 days of 100. My own nephew, who fortunately is graduating this year, but when he was in 5th grade, he came up to me proud one day that he only missed 2 out of 5 days that week. He said, "Hey, Uncle, I only missed 2 days of school this week." When I told him, "Dayton, you're going to be in school till you're 25, 26 years old if you keep this up," he was just befuddled by that statement. He was just so proud that he made it to school 3 out of 5 days. And a lot of that is you fall further and further behind. Another one of my nephews, my brother's own son, I know he's far behind in reading, and he's in 3rd grade at a Palmer school because he's just missed a tremendous amount of days of instruction. So I think this is one tool in the toolbox. I think this is a good piece of legislation. NEA Alaska supports it. And on the upper side, there is a letter to Senator Davis. I hope we'll make it through if this bill moves on to the next committee, kind of from President Barb and Gayak, who's taught in Western Alaska since 1980. So she's in her 31st year, and she can tell you the times of the stories of folks that at age 16, I think that was mentioned in previous testimony, they come and want to sign papers so they can get out of school. I hope we can end that now in the 21st century. I hope this Senate Bill 9 can move on through the legislative process, and I appreciate your gentleman's time today. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions? Hearing none, thank you. Is Superintendent Como on the line? Okay. All right. Thank you. Let's see. We also did want to make sure that the correct interpretation is 18 years old, meaning your 18th birthday, you can be gone. It doesn't force you beyond that point. And there are some exemptions as well, which I don't know if everyone's aware of those or not, but if somebody from the department would care to comment on those, or if Les Morse is online.
This is, for the record, Les Morse, the Deputy Commissioner at the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development.
Thank you for being there, and we didn't make you aware of that, but it just occurred to me today that there are some exemptions. We've discussed some in the past, and maybe if you're If you have them before you, I don't want to put you in a spot. If you have them before you, if you just quickly review those, I think that would be helpful because there are some concerns over those.
I do have the exemptions, and actually this law does not change the exemptions, but there are several that would that I think are worthy of just making sure the committee is aware of. So they include some common sense things, like a student being in a private school with certified teachers, a student being tutored by personnel who are certified, a student who is in an educational program that's sponsored by a religious or private school, attends an operated federal school, a student who has a physical or mental condition where a medical authority indicates that attendance would be impractical, a student in the custody of the courts, a student temporarily ill or injured for that period of time, a student who has been suspended under the appropriate regulations and denied attendance, and students who, there's also one that deals with where they reside, being physically close to a school or not, and then a situation where they're excused by the district or the board of the local district, and then finally a student who has graduated from secondary school regardless of age. And then in many of these cases where students are not engaged in the schooling process, once we had the statewide correspondence schools, we found that many students become engaged in public education in that way. And then the only other thing that I think I would like to mention, Senator, is that the last committee, somebody asked about violations, and if the committee would like, I could indicate what the law is around compulsory ed and what happens if one violates that, if that's of interest to the committee.
Yes, yes it is. If you'd please continue.
Okay, so under, this is under the compulsory attendance and the violations. In this case, the violations of this are to a parent. The way the regulation, or actually the law reads, is every parent, guardian, or other person having responsibility for the control of a child between ages 7 and 16, that's how the law currently is written, of the age shall maintain the child's attendance in public school. It further outlines that each 5 days of unlawful absence is considered a violation. And then there are various things that obviously the courts can do, but there is a maximum financial penalty of $500 per violation that can be fined against a family for each of the violations. And again, each violation, each 5 days is a violation under the compulsory attendance. So that is the one question I believe came up that I wanted to, at the last time this was heard, I wanted to make sure that was addressed. Thank you.
And thank you. Are there any questions? Senator Stevens.
just a comment. I'd like to thank Mr. Morris for successfully surviving his acting commissionership. I think he held the department together. He kept it on track. He spoke for the department, represented the department, and made no missteps as far as I've heard. I just want to thank you for your service, Les.
Thank you, Senator Stevens.
Okay, very good. Is Superintendent Comeau on the line? If not, we'll... Okay. In that case, I see no one else that has been invited to testify. Are there any other questions or comments? Concerns, issues, amendments? Senator Meyer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. No questions, comments, or amendments. I agree with Senator Stevens. I think the lowering the age makes perfect sense. And I guess I'm still not sold on the upper age, going from 16 to 18, if that's going to help or if it's going to make things worse, in the sense that I've spent quite a bit of time in high schools, and the ones, at least in Anchorage, are fairly large, about 2,000 kids. I'll take Service High, for example. That's one I spent most of the time. And If kids are there at age 16 and they don't want to be there, it's going to be disruptive, and I just hope it doesn't curtail or make it difficult for those kids who are there who are trying to learn. Now, I read in the sponsor's comments here that her goal is that that you know, having these kids be here, that we then try to motivate them so that they will continue on to get their degree. This, her words, this is part of her plan. Now, we don't know what that plan is. I'd like to see that, because I think that would be great if we can somehow motivate kids that are 16 who don't want to be there to be there and go on and get their degree. A second concern I have is that, unfortunately, on this committee, we don't have any representation from the rural areas. Now, some would say maybe Kodiak is rural, but I'm thinking more of some of the village schools and smaller schools out in western, northwestern Alaska, where we do have challenges with our graduation rates and school dropouts. And there could be issues there where at a certain age, especially maybe the sons, the boys, are expected to go out hunting for long periods of time and aren't expected to be in school. I really don't know. It would be good to have that input. But with those concerns on the record, Mr. Chairman, I have no problem with moving this bill on. I think it probably should be moved on so we can continue the discussion, especially I think the lowering the age is very important.
Any other? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. And I agree with what Senator Meyer said. It's really a conundrum. You're not sure if you're doing a good thing by increasing it to 18 or making the classroom even more disruptive. It can't be worse than it is right now in the sense of truancy, you know. So if we – I hope that if this does pass, that we do a very careful study. The department follows it very carefully to see if it's working or if it's not working, and so it can be revisited at a later date if we find that it's causing more problems than it should. But I think what we're seeing is enormous frustration on everyone's part. What do we do about the terrible truancy we have in this state and throughout the nation? So it may not be the absolute right answer, but it may be better than what we're now doing. And I agree. I think I'm in favor of moving it on.
Okay, good. Okay. Any other comments or questions? If there aren't, what is the will of the committee? Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that we move Senate Bill 9 from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 9 is moved from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease. Okay, back on the record. We do need to make a comment to the fiscal note. There is a fiscal note, so Senator Meyer, if you'd just correct that for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Mr. Chairman, in looking at the fiscal note, there is an initial appropriation required of $14,858,000, and then after that it is zero the following year. So that my mistake, but there is a appropriation required, at least in the first year.
Okay, very good. I think that should correct the record anyhow, so I think we're okay there then. All right, next we'll take up Senate Bill 83 relating to incentives for public school teachers who have achieved national board certification. If staff would care to come forward and put themselves or their self on the record. And
I'll move to adopt the committee substitute.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer.
I move that we adopt the CS for Senate Bill 83 / D as in dog as our working document.
And I will object for the purposes of explanation.
Okay. My name is Murray Richmond. I'm co-aide for the Senate Education Committee. There's been one change in this committee substitute. The question came up about different districts that currently offer incentives for nationally board certified teachers, and did what this bill do prohibit them from giving incentives of their own. And so on page 2, line 12, we added a paragraph that says nothing in this section prohibits a district or the department from providing additional monetary incentives to a teacher. And so if a district wants to financially reward their teachers who are nationally board certified, they would be able to do so, and that would be in addition to anything that they would receive from this bill. And that's the only change that was made.
Comments, questions? None. Well, okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And do we have anybody sign up for testimony for this? We have one. But I think we had one person that was.
I think Mr. Alcantara didn't. No.
No, John. But there was Cynthia Curran, I think, was online. Is online?
She's online and available for questions.
Sure. Oh, just for answering questions. Okay. Anybody have any questions of Ms. Curran? She's the teaching learning support director.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, I do have a question, and I don't know if this is for Ms. Curran or Carol Como, but it doesn't sound like Ms. Como is online. Okay, very good. It appears, unless I'm not reading this correctly, that the certification is worth $2,000 annually to a teacher in Anchorage and or Fairbanks, whereas if you get a PhD, that's an additional $1,500. So it would seem like it's more worth your while to get the certification than it is a PhD. I just wanted to make sure that I understand that correctly. And I think that is just for Anchorage and Fairbanks. But if somebody could clarify that and maybe tell me why, that would be helpful.
I think we have somebody here. John Alcantara, you want to speak to that? and maybe clarify the difference between the district's contribution and, as well as the bill related to Department of Education.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, John Alcantara, Government Relations Director for NEA Alaska. A little bit of this confusion came last week when I answered Senator French's question about master's degrees in Anchorage. Specifically in Anchorage, a master's degree is worth $552 more on the pay scale. In many of the 53 Alaska school districts, you can't continue to move on a pay scale until you achieve a master's eventually. You get a bachelor's plus 36. Very few now have bachelor's plus 54. You have to turn that bachelor's degree eventually into a master's degree to continue to get additional financial incentives. So it gets a little murky on exactly how much more monetary value there could be in a master's degree. But through the chair to Senator Meyer's question, there are specifically in Anchorage. There are 3,700, give or take, Anchorage Education Association members, certified teachers, and there are 23 PhDs, including our current president of the Anchorage Education Association. And the senator is correct, and I sent an email to all five members of the committee and the committee aides saying that the $1,500 figure that I mentioned last week is actually for a PhD. Each district can decide, and the four, I guess, largest districts in the state do decide to incentivize national board certification, as this bill, Senate Bill 83, that we strongly support does try to do as well. And part of that, I would say, is that there's you have to recertify every 10 years, maybe part. And the PhD component, I don't know, somebody from Anchorage School District or somewhere would have to speak on why there'd be that disparity. But I know the numbers as they exist right now, there are 55 nationally board certified teachers in Anchorage of the 120 or so statewide, and there are 23 PhD. I would only kind of hazard a guess that a lot of folks that go on to get PhD certifications are looking to move on in administration and potentially move out of the classroom. That'd be my only guess as to why that number is $500 a year lower than the National Board certified number. So I hope that helps a little bit instead of makes things a little cloudier. And I don't know if Cynthia Curran or anybody else could speak to any of the other senators' questions.
Thank you. Thank you. Senator Meyer.
Yeah, appreciate the explanation, Mr. Alcantara. And it was actually your email here is that generated the question as to why the disparity between a PhD and the board certification. And you mentioned that a lot of times, or more likely, people get certified that want to go on and be administrators, principals, or what have you. But do we have a lot of teachers that are actually PhDs that are teaching in the classrooms? Or?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, the district I know about, I mean, we're talking 23 out of 3,700. So you're talking a little over one half of 1% of the actual in the classroom that have PhDs. So I think the answer to your question is no, we do not have a lot of, you know, PhDs that are teaching in K-12.
Okay. And I think you mentioned the fact, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
When you become certified, it's ongoing. Every 10 years you have to become recertified, whereas I guess once you get your PhD, you're done. Is that right?
Yeah. PhD, yes, you're done.
Through the chair to Senator Meyer, I think once you attain that level of education, they don't take it away from you, or you don't have to go prove yourself through another doctoral thesis 10 years down the road. But I sir, do not have one, so I would go to folks that do in the room that can explain that. But, yeah, I think that is one piece of that. You do have to recertify the National Board Cert every 10 years. And I think it was Ms. Curran that mentioned once she went into administration, she let her National Board certification lapse because I would guess that, you know, since they're out of the contractual obligation, there's no more, you know, $2,000 additional financial incentive or more if you have National Board certification.
Okay, and I guess we'll assume then that's worth the $500 more, the fact that you have to do the ongoing certification, and whereas the PhD, once you have it, you're done. Okay, thank
really
you very
like
much.
That, yeah.
Thank you, Senators.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? And we have no one else online to testify, is my understanding. And we have no other questions. So in that case, what is the will of the body?
Well, Mr. Chair, I didn't know if our PhD wanted to add anything to this discussion or not. So.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that the comment that once you've got a PhD, you're done is pretty much probably it. I don't have any defense of PhDs. It shows a lot of persistence. And,
you know. Very good. No other comments, questions? If not, what is the will of the body?
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, There's a fiscal note with this. So, Mr. Chair, I would like to make a motion to move SB 83 from committee with the individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes. And there is at least one that is going to require appropriation.
Okay. Very good. And that is version D, I believe, is there?
Yes, version D.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there objection? Seeing none. Senate Bill 83, version / D, is moved from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes. And we'll take a brief at ease for signing. Time is allowing us to move forward with another bill. We have SB 8 that we thought we might get around to considering if we had time, and it appears there's time today. So in that case, we need to at least have Tom come forward, and we need to
just need an explanation of it.
Yeah, we don't need it.
That sounds fair. You just introduce the bill. Put yourself on the record first. Introduce the bill, and we'll take a public testimony later.
Through the chair, I'm Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis, and the bill before you is Senate Bill 8, an act relating to questionnaires and surveys administered in public schools. This particular bill primarily relates to the Youth Risk Behavior Survey that I'll explain in the sponsor statement, which I'll read shortly here. The purpose of this bill is to increase participation in the National Biennial Youth Risk Behavior Survey, YRBS, in order to meet the minimum 60% participation required by the Centers for Disease Control, CDC, for the survey to be validated for assessment, recording, and reporting of reliable results. Alaska has periodically failed to meet minimum participation levels. This anonymous survey will next be administered in Alaska school districts in spring 2011 and 2013. This survey is enormously valuable to all aspects of society dealing with our youth. Failure to obtain usable information adversely affects education and funding of many services. To help achieve this objective, this bill will change the parental consent requirement for the YRBS, the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, from active to passive, that is, from written or to implied consent if the parent does not object or deny permission in writing for the student to participate in the survey. To alleviate increased concerns about protecting the right of privacy, the bill provides lengthy and detailed new notice requirements, which I'll go over in a minute, which will be sent to parents at least 2 weeks in advance of the survey. There will be ample time and opportunity for parents to review the survey with instructions on how to opt out. Students may also independently decline to participate or to answer specific questions, which is another change in this completely voluntary and anonymous survey. Absolute privacy and anonymity are maintained by strict administrative procedures and the return of surveys to the CDC. Written permission is still required to be obtained from the student's parent or legal guardian for all other surveys, anonymous or not, that inquire into personal or private family affairs of the student and not a matter of public record or subject to public observation. Although research and experience suggest that the vast majority of parents would consent to the students participating in this survey, failure of parents to return written consent forms has been found more often to be the result of a lack of interest or attention rather than refusal. It also has something to do, I might add, with the timing of the survey going out in spring and consent being given in August. That's the reason we're changing the notice requirements before the survey is administered, or at least emphasizing that. I think they still give adequate notice. Consequently, the results from whole schools periodically must be disregarded when not enough parental consent forms are required. Without facts and population-based information on youth risk behavior, parents, students, educators, planners, and policymakers cannot understand and address the important health and social issues that affect students' happiness and success in the future. The Youth Risk Behavior Survey helps guide and evaluate important health and prevention programs in both the public and private sectors. Local, state, and federal officials, schools, state, and federal agencies, public and private grant programs, and nonprofit health organizations rely on these surveys to educate, allocate resources, and compare trends concerning safety behaviors, injury prevention, tobacco prevention and control, obesity prevention, diabetes, heart disease, stroke, safe and drug-free schools, substance abuse prevention, violence, and suicide prevention, HIV, STD prevention, and connectedness to teachers, parents, and other adults. SB 8 simply makes it easier to obtain information on youth risk behaviors while increasing procedures to assure privacy, parental notice, and supervision. Now, I would like to mention that the sectional summary that is added indicates that Section 1 adds the exception to the written permission for the student surveys. Section 2 provides detailed written notice requirements for all student surveys. That is a substantial change, and I can go over those with you. It adds specific questions and process for a student or parent to refuse to participate in a survey by submitting written denial of permission. And Section 4 provides an exception to written permission for YRBS and a minimum of 2-week notice provision that is consistent with the requirements in Section 2. The bill itself is only 2 pages long. The Section 2 was repealed and reenacted to include many more notice requirements to the parents that were not in the previous law, which I have also included in your hearing package on 1403.110. The Section 3 was specifically addressed to just allow the student to refuse not only to participate as in the past, but also to refuse to answer specific questions that they consider too personal. And then finally, it requires that parent's legal guardian or parent or legal guardian may refuse to allow participation by submitting the letter to the teacher or the principal, a written denial for that participation, but for a new section indicates that that must be done not later than 2 weeks before the survey is to be administered, giving them time to review it. It will be provided to them. It's probably available online, and the opportunity to submit to the teacher or principal written denial of permission to take the survey. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Tom. Can you tell me how, if we don't have this information, it affects funding of services? Could you sort of give me an idea of what we're really talking about there, Tom? What funding would be affected if we don't respond to, if our students don't do these surveys?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, it's my understanding that many of the agencies that deal with youth, and there are many of them that are indicated in some of the handouts, that, that whether it's the United Way or it's youth services or the diabetes organizations, the heart and other agencies that deal with these people, part of their funding comes from engaging these activities with the with tracking youth and providing services to youth. And they could probably speak better to it. I don't believe they're online today because they didn't anticipate this bill coming up, which I think was scheduled for Friday. But we'd be happy to get answers to that because every one of those organizations in the past has weighed in on this, that this is such an important part of their mission, however it's funded, to try to help provide information to parents, students, educators, planners, and policymakers to help these students avoid problems and to assist them if they're engaged in them now.
Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I know we'll have more questions because a lot of us did bring the bill with us because we were anticipating bringing this up on Friday. So we'll have more questions as well, as I know there'll be public testimony, because this isn't a new issue. This is something that has come up frequently, actually, and I know it's a very sensitive issue to many parents. But maybe you could just describe how the process works now, and then maybe I think maybe in the original packet you even had a sample of the questionnaire, because I think some parents found them the questions to be very offensive. You know, they were asking about the kids' sex life and et cetera.
Well, through the chair, Senator Meyer, I did submit over the weekend a copy, an enormous amount of information electronically to the committee and to all the members, to the aides as well as the members, and this included a complete survey from 2009 with 99 questions, and I'm sure there are five or six questions that are very specific that people find offensive, very personal, and it's usually related to sexual activity, and yet this is something that parents recognize is going on in the schools, and yet they may not realize how prevalent it is, and also how connected it is to the diseases that are attached to this that CDC tracks, and the other precautions that can be provided to students once they have the knowledge. You can't act on problems if you don't have the knowledge. And so that is, we're not trying to hide any part of the survey itself. To try to address that, the bill actually said this time that they may not answer if they don't wish to either the entire survey or specific questions that they find personally offensive. Now, maybe the parents just don't want this this type of question addressed to their children because they are offensive, and if that's the case, then we just ask that they give written denial of permission to the school that they do not wish them to participate. So the question won't even be presented to them if they voluntarily offer to take it. If they can still, the parent can still ignore the survey. The student can go in there and say, "I don't want to take it. I've talked to my parents. They haven't sent anything in," or they can just say, "I don't want to answer these." They can just decide not to answer those questions. Now, the other part of your question regarding to how it's administered, it's my understanding that throughout the United States, the comparisons are enormously useful to see what our children are doing in Alaska versus other states, because it is a national biennial, every other year survey. And it also is useful to see where the fact that in our school districts we will get the greater number of students participating in those schools or districts that are selected. Now, I may be corrected by the department, and they may speak to this, but it's my understanding that not every school district's involved. There are usually a sampling of like 20 out of 53 school districts, usually hitting the larger ones all the time, to make sure that we have a representative sampling. 60% participation should not be that great a problem. But on the other hand, if we do not get the 60% level, the CDC will throw out Alaska. and we will not have any background information for at least 2 years while they do it again to see where we are standing in and how we can remedy problems that are cropping up in youth risk behaviors. They've spent a great deal of money trying to get parents permission. They can't get a hold of parents. There are the schools try to phone call parents if they haven't done it. And actually, as I mentioned earlier, logistically, the way they handle this at the beginning of the school year is a parent will sign the child up for school, and they will ask if they want them to participate in surveys. In the past, they've also asked them. They will also tell them at least 2 weeks in advance that this one's coming in spring when they give it, because parents will forget that this survey is coming up. But to remedy that problem of notice, what this bill does, it has lengthened from about two or three issues of notice to a very great detail in Section 2, page 1 and 2 of the bill, that the date of the questionnaire that's going to be administered goes to the parent, the description of the survey, the sponsor, the name of the person at the district who may be contacted, notice an opportunity to review the questionnaire or survey, a description of the manner in which the questionnaire or survey will be administered, instructions for submitting written permission or denial of permission, and notice of the opportunity for the student to refuse specific questions. And so we're trying to make it as easy as possible, but still allow the survey to continue if the parent doesn't take the time to write a written denial. Now, if this bill fails, the school districts will do what they've done in the past. They will make every effort to try to get those parents to sign up for this or to tell them that they don't want to sign up for it. They'll do whatever's necessary. But it's unfortunate that Alaska periodically has failed to meet a 60% participation requirement, and that is the burden that so many of the schools, that the educators, the policy planners, and all these various agencies that will probably speak to this later this week are concerned about.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you for that explanation, but I think what this tells me is that the administrators, the school districts, have not done a good job in educating the parents on why this information is important if you're not getting that 60% hurdle, or maybe the parents don't want their kids participating in it. You mentioned something about when you sign the kids up at the beginning of the year, can't the parents just check a box saying, yes, I want my kids to participate, or no, I don't want my kids to participate, and wouldn't that be good enough? Rather than asking parents to actually have to do written denial, I mean, I think the way it's worked now is parents have to do a written permission saying that the kids will participate, and I guess I like that better, because then that forces the parents and the kids to talk about it. Go ahead.
Well, through the chair, and again, I'm not an expert on how the school districts handle this, and I suspect they would be better able to answer the question. But it's my understanding that a parent can say yes or no at the beginning if they want surveys. The problem is that the school district will be administering more than just the YRBS survey. And so if the parents don't object to surveys being given, the law states that if you do give an anonymous, a personal survey, you will have to get some kind of permission from the parents, and in this particular instance, since it's totally anonymous, the consent would be implied unless they give written permission not to. And to assure that the parents are not missed in this, they will, as you were questioning why they aren't working harder with them, they will be required within 2 weeks of that survey in the spring to give them additional notice that this particular survey is going to be administered, and that they would like them to acknowledge that by written denial of consent that they don't want their child to participate. I can see exactly where you're coming from, and I've given some thought to it. It does put a great burden on the schools to get more participation. It's been my understanding that they have spent tens of thousands of dollars trying to encourage parents to sign up for this by having pizza parties at the schools to remind them when they get together that this survey is coming. There are all kinds of things that are done, But and I don't know if there's any validity to the statement, but there have been, I should say, not surveys, but at least inquiries made of why parents sometimes have not given permission, and often they say it really has not been brought to their attention. By the time the survey is given, they might think about it, and so they don't get the participation, but many of them would not prevent the child from participating.
Well, thank you. We'll be taking this bill up again, obviously, possibly Wednesday. I think our schedule is Friday.
Oh, and one other thing that I might add before I close. The information I provided with the links to the survey results, you'll find that there are hundreds of pages of survey results on all the various types of activities. So it isn't just one type of activity this focuses on, and I think you'll find that information very useful. And that's the reason that the student can pick and choose which questions they want to answer, because all of those questions are targeted for various areas of graphing and checking nationally against our own students. Thank you.
Great, and thank you. Let's see. Our next meeting is Wednesday, the 23rd, and it's 8 a.m. in the Ramona Barnes Committee Room, which is number 124 of the Capitol Building. It's a joint education committee meeting, so we look forward to seeing everybody there at that time. And with
Mr. Chairman,
just
to let the audience and whoever may be listening, you know, it will be an overview with the new commissioner Department of Education, Mike Hanley, and also I think we're having the annual report from the Board of Regents. So
that's correct. Thank you for making sure we mentioned it.
Yeah, and also it could go over an hour long, because the House, of course, goes for 2 hours. So
that's right. Okay. Very good. Any other comments, questions? If none, we're adjourned.